So we'll read verse number one. So Sukadeva Goswami continued. So you're now after Bali welcomes the Lord, and that ends the last chapter. He glorifies and welcomes the Lord. Now Sukadeva Goswami narrates what the Lord is going to respond. When the personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, heard Bali Maharaj speaking in this pleasing way, he was very satisfied, for Bali Maharaj had spoken in terms of religious principles. Thus the Lord began to praise him. Verse number two. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, you are indeed exalted because your present advisors are the Brahmanas who are descendants of Bhrigu, and because your instructor for your future life is your grandfather, the peaceful and venerable Prahlad Maharaj. Your statements are very true, and they completely agree with religious etiquette. They are in keeping in the behavior of your family, and they enhance your reputation. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Prahlad Maharaj is a vivid example of a pure devotee. Someone might argue that since Prahlad Maharaj, even though very old, was attached to his family, and specifically to his grandson, Bali Maharaj, how could he be an ideal example? Therefore, this verse uses the word prashantaha. A devotee is always sober. That doesn't mean you get drunk. You don't get drunk. That's not what sober means. Sober means equipoised in happiness and distress. So one who's moved by happiness and distress is called adhira, or not sober. So sober means one is peaceful if they're not moved by the change of situations in life. That's called dhira, or sober. He is never disturbed by any conditions. Even if a devotee remains in grihastha life and does not renounce material possessions, he should still be understood to be prashanta, sober, because of his pure devotion to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says, Kipa vipa kipa nasa suda kaini noi, yehi Krishna tatva vete sehi guru hoi. Whether one is a brahmana, a sannyasi, or a sudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. That's from Madhya Lila, chapter 8, 128. Anyone completely aware of the science of Krishna, regardless of his situation in life, is a guru. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj is a guru in all circumstances. Now, Prabhupada ends the purport with a little small paragraph that is completely preempting what's about to happen. It has nothing to do with what has passed, nor has anything to do with this verse. So here's the end. Here, His Lordship Vamadeva is also teaching sannyasis and brahmacharis that one should not ask more than necessary. He wanted only 3 paces of land, although Bali Maharaj wanted to give him anything he wanted. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stabditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Krishna now starts to speak. Vamanadeva, in his incarnation as a little Brahmin boy. The Lord wants to act in such a way that he maximizes the opportunity to fulfill his mission. So he could have came in any particular way, but he chose to become a brahmana and what was the best of all brahmanas, someone that was so attractive that all the other brahmanas were simply diminished by his presence. That's what it says, that the Bhrigu dynasty is considered a very glorious dynasty of brahmanas. Their history, their tradition, their culture, everything is the most exemplary among the brahminical class. But Vamanadeva's appearance just made them look like they weren't even present. He completely made them insignificant. He wanted to focus his attention on himself. He wanted everyone to focus their attention on him, so he could enlighten and instruct Bali Maharaj and to everyone else who was there also. And when he came in, he was effulgent. In fact, it was so effulgent that no one could not notice. Everyone immediately had to give all attention and at the same time awe and reverence to the Lord's presence. And then he, after being welcomed nicely by Bali Maharaj, who was overwhelmed by the Lord's presence, he starts to speak. And he begins by glorifying the dynasty of Prahlad Maharaj, or the family members of Bali Maharaj, the grandfather. Prahlad Maharaj's son is Virochan, and Virochan's son is Bali Maharaj. So he's glorifying that you are keeping the etiquette that is established by your ancestry, and especially the best of all, Prahlad Maharaj. And your behavior will enhance the quality and reputation of your whole family and your whole dynasty. Why? Because Bali acted in the most exemplary, although he was of the Asura class. This is the most interesting thing. Nowadays, the Asuras are a lot different than they were before. Nowadays, no one even knows how to become an Asura. They're like disqualified Asuras. But they still try. All they can do is give trouble to others. They don't know how to do it in the proper way. They just do it. No culture amongst the Asuras. But here we have actually cultured Asura, that he understood religious principles, although he worked against the ultimate religious principle, and that is that trying to usurp the property of the Lord. But at the same time, he understood that everything belonged to the Lord at the same time. In other words, he wanted to be the best of all human beings. And that's the Asuras. They just want to be the controller of everything material. And nowadays, even the Asuras don't even acknowledge the existence of God. But here, Bali Maharaj had already acknowledged. He came from a family of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj was born in the family of Hiranyakashipu, who was the best of the daityas, we might say, or the most powerful of all daityas. But he was a devotee of the Lord. And he stayed within that family dynasty, and he ruled as an Asura, or as one who is of the... Because Prahlad Maharaj is also called daitya, or Asura. So his grandfather, or grandson, you might say, Bali Maharaj, is glorious in so many ways. And now the Lord is glorifying him. But then Prabhupada goes on to explain that someone might feel a little bit slighted by Prahlad Maharaj's situation. That how could he be so exemplary if he stayed in household life the most of his life? And we read, we don't even read that he retired from household life. We don't really know the history. But he was an ideal grihastha. And Prabhupada changes the whole focus just to make us understand that whatever ashram you're in, just become Krishna conscious. That's the whole thing. It's not a matter of ashram. Ashram is an opportunity for cultivation of the principles of religion, which are designated according to that ashram to allow you to make advancement. So some people are more suited to brahmachari and sannyas, and others are more suited to grihastha. So find your ashram and become Krishna conscious. It's not, Prabhupada was saying, this is interesting, I was just listening to Prabhupada yesterday on a tape, and he was saying, one ashram is not better than another. And he kept saying it over and over throughout the lecture. One ashram is not better than the other. And he cited many of the glorious grihasthas who came in the history of our tradition, who did amazing service. And Prabhupada also would glorify his devotees who came to London in 1969, I think it was, 69 or 70, to begin the London Yatra. And who were they? Three grihastha couples. And Prabhupada said, where my sannyasi godbrothers had come to London and failed, my grihastha disciples were successful. So there's an example, a prime example of, it's not ashram, it's really the mercy of the Lord coming through the spiritual master, where one can take that mercy and do wonderful things with it, purifying one's own existence and at the same time become an example to spread Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada wants to make that point, whether you're a Brahmin, sannyasi, because really the spirit soul has no material designations. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes that point very strong. He says, I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm Grahastha, Vanaprastha, sannyas, nothing. What am I? Gopi Bharti Padika Malayor. Dasa, dasa, anudasa. He gives the identity of the soul. The soul is ultimately the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna's servants. And that's all the soul can ever be in any situation. But material designations are simply opportunities to execute one's duties and needs accordingly. That's all. So beyond all these ephemeral, we may say ephemeral or changing situations, one's real identity is, you know, servant of the Lord, or servant of the devotees of the Lord, like that. So, therefore, the opportunity for service comes in different ways. And there's no, what we say, restriction. Now, sometimes you hear Srila Prabhupada say the opposite. He says household life is simply a deep, dark well, right? That if you fall into it, nobody can even hear you crying. I mean, he speaks about that also, like that. But of course, he's talking about materialistic household life, where one becomes attached to wife or husband, children, conveniences, conveyances, so many things. I remember I was in New Vrindavan in 1974, I think it was, or 76. Prabhupada came both times. Anyway, this is one of the first times I saw Srila Prabhupada, and he was giving a class from the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Prahlad's prayers to his schoolmates. Now, if you read that chapter, that's one of the most powerful philosophical chapters in the entire Bhagavatam. Prahlad's instructions to his schoolmates. Very powerful. And in one verse, now this chapter had just come out. It just came hot off the press. And they gave the book to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada wanted to give a class on this particular chapter. So, of course, it's the seventh canto, chapter number 6. So there's one verse where it describes the attached householder. And he's surrounded by so many material conveyances and conveyances, and his wife feeds him all kinds of nice foods, and she charms him in so many nice ways, and his children speak broken language, and he's simply mesmerized like a donkey. And it goes on and on, describing the attachments of household life. And Prabhupada is having his disciple, who was it, Pradyumna, was reading the purport, the translation. And the translation is like five verses in one. So it's really power-packed, describing the entrenchment of household life. And then Prabhupada's sitting there, and he's got these big glasses on. And some Prabhupada used to wear these big glasses. And he was looking down at the book, and then as soon as the translation was finished, Prabhupada went like this. Just see. Big smile on his face, like, you don't want that, do you? And everybody cracked up. I mean, I remember we all laughed. And Prabhupada, as soon as we laughed, Prabhupada got real serious. He said, "Purport!" Okay. And then it went. We got really serious. And then Pradyumna reads the purport, and Prabhupada gives the class after that. So that's materialistic household life. But devotees who also are in household life should not become, what we say, overwhelmed by the opportunities for the conveniences that come by way of household life. You get a lot of opportunities. Now, Prabhupada ends this purport with something that is somewhat not related to what's happening, but is related to what's about to come. He mentions, although Vamanadeva has not even asked for three steps of land yet. He's not even asked for it yet. And Prabhupada mentions that he's teaching sannyasis and brahmacharis that one should not ask for more than necessary. And the understanding is, why is the Lord doing that? Because he wants to make this point that you can be happy with what you need. If you're happy with what you need, you'll never be happy with anything more. In other words, happiness does not come by having more or less. It's having what you need to keep body and soul together in order to execute devotional service in such a way that one can focus on the goal of life and not be enamored or distracted by the amenities of material existence. And the thing is, this is Kali Yuga. This is the most difficult age to become Krishna conscious. In 95% of the different categories of activities. But there's one category that makes everything easy, and that's called the holy name. Only because of the holy name we have any chance in this age. Otherwise, we're finished. This age is just too difficult. There's too many distractions, too many attacks by the material energy. The society is so, what we say, soul-killing. I mean, you just look at the media. What is the media always saying? You need this, right? And if you don't get it, you're not going to be happy. You got to have it. It's necessary. And see this movie star? He has it, and he's smiling. Right? They pay these movie stars and sports heroes, they give them large amounts of money to appear on these commercials just to shave in public, right? So they can get some, you know, this is the best shaving cream that has ever been existent since time immemorial, right? And they make these big arrangements because there would be no television if there wasn't for commercials. Because commercials sponsor all the expenses of the media so they can advertise their products. So it's all about getting you to buy what they want you to buy, which is basically what you don't need, right? Because the whole idea of Western civilization is to get your money. Right? Prabhupada says the government will do everything to get your money, even though you don't want them to give it to them. Right? Tax, more tax, this tax, that tax, inflation, go here. I remember, this was really funny. Just a little side antidote. I went to the airport. And I put my bags for weighing. And they said, you're overweight. And I said, all right. How much? They said, you have to pay 29 euros. So I said, fine, okay. So they wrote me out a slip, and they said, you have to go to this counter over there and pay the 29 euros. So I took the slip. I had the 29 euros in my hand. I went up to the counter, gave them the slip, and the lady said, that'll be 34 euros. I said, it says 29. She said, yes, but we charge 5 euros for the transaction. And I said, I don't really want your transaction. You kind of forced me into this transaction. But, you know, what could you say, right? You can't argue. So I paid the 5 euros reluctantly. So that's it. So there's always ways to get your money more and more and more and more and more. That's just the way Kali Yuga is. So advertising and creating needs. And creating needs means increasing greed. And greed is in the mode of ignorance. Greed is in the mode of ignorance. More and more and more. There's a saying in America, they used to have a bumper sticker, I don't know if maybe you've seen it here. He who dies with the most toys wins. I don't know if you ever saw that. He who dies with the most toys wins. It's a joke. What they're saying is, you know, just get more and more, and then you'll be the happiest person when you die, right? Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gorda Taiki. So it's not about getting, it's about living. Therefore, there are three modes of material nature. Write this down. Everybody's taking notes? Okay. Somebody is. There's one in the back there. The mode of ignorance is, if I can get something, I can do something, I can be something. So the first thing is to get. If I can get something, I can do something, I can be something. The mode of passion is, if I can do something, then I can get something, and I can be something. The mode of goodness is, if I can be something, then I can do something, and then I'll get something. So it's about being. Not about getting or doing. So what does that mean? Become Krishna conscious. And everything else is added onto you automatically. Because that's the complete whole. One who's Krishna conscious, they're happy. They're not moved by how much they have or how much they don't have. So it's not success in life is not changing ashrams, but cultivating the ashram you're in such a way that you can become happy and fulfilled in execution of devotional service. That's all. And live simply. The danger of grihastha ashram, there's only one danger in grihastha ashram. Taking more than you possibly need on the basis of the idea that it's for my household. If you have too much, and there's no time for Krishna, or little time for Krishna. So live simply and execute the goal of life here. And that's what this is what Vamanadeva is saying. He's teaching it, as Prabhupada said, he's teaching to sannyasis and brahmacharis. But he's teaching it to everybody, actually. So one who is satisfied with what they need will always be satisfied in all conditions. So the whole propaganda of this material society is you're incomplete, right? Material society teaches you you're incomplete, and you need this for happiness. Spiritual life says, Om Purnam Araha Purnam Idam Purnam Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnadaya Purnam Eva Vasishyate. That everything's perfect and complete. You just have to connect with the complete perfect, and you'll understand your own completeness and perfectness also. Because the soul is complete. And even the body, when it's acting properly, is a complete functioning unit. But therefore, when we're connected to connect Krishna, that's the only need in this life. To connect to Krishna. In other words, to become Krishna conscious. So it's not a matter of having more or less or changing ashrams or this or that. It's about practicing Krishna consciousness. Bali Maharaj. I mean, there are devotees who are very, very simple, poor, and have very little possessions. And we see in our tradition there are devotees who have a lot. Look at Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He had so much. And he bewildered Gadadhar Pandit, who was very simple. But then the Lord revealed the qualities of Pundarik Vidyanidhi to Gadadhar Pandit in such a way to show that although he had so much, he wasn't attached. Because there's devotees in different bobs, different moods. And some devotees have this mood, or maybe even their karma, spiritual karma, of having a lot, but using a lot. Because if you have a lot, you got to use a lot. If you have a little, then you use whatever you got, right? So it's, therefore, we find that there are great devotees who live very luxuriously, but have no attachment to it. And then we have devotees who have very little, and still, they're not attached to it. Prabhupada said, if you are attached to living under a tree, that's attachment. If you're attached to your palace, that's attachment. So whether you live under a tree or under in a palace, if you're wealthy or simple, it's not a matter of how much have you do have, how much you have or don't have. It's a matter of whether you're attached to the situation or not. And we might say, well, yeah, I'm not attached. And then Krishna will test you just to see how unattached you are. And then when he tests you, you'll get the chance to see. And we also pray, my dear Lord, please take away whatever I don't need in my life that is in my impediment in my devotional service, and please give me whatever I need in my life so I can make advancement in devotional service. There was one great devotee in our movement used to ask the devotees, make that prayer. Make that prayer. My dear Lord, whatever I need, bring it on. Whatever I don't need, take it away. Now that's a scary prayer, right? You might think, wow, what happens if he takes my family away? Yeah, there was one devotee, he wrote a Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada this year. And I was reading it. It was an amazing offering. Because in the offering, he tells how Prabhupada, he's a grihastha, his wife, wonderful devotee, happy marriage, nice children, Krishna conscious atmosphere. Prabhupada appears into a dream and tells him, take sannyas. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did to Prabhupada. He doesn't know how to act. He doesn't know how to react. Prabhupada appeared again and told him, take sannyas. The second time, he was thinking, this is serious. It wasn't, he said, the way he describes it, you can read it, it's in the book Tributes. You can read it. He describes it in such a way, it was more than a dream. Was actually a personal presence of Prabhupada in his life. And then he had to present it to his wife. And that was just as hard as, you know, accepting it himself. And somehow or other, after discussing it, he decided, this is what I'm going to do. And his wife also agreed. Mm-hmm. So he's moving on in that direction. So, you know, so that's a test. I mean, that's a big test. Prabhupada actually could see that he had a lot to offer. And by being in the sannyasa ashram, he could do much more service to society. And that's why we change ashrams. We don't change ashrams because, you know, it's a better situation. If it can increase our service, if it can increase our preaching, if it can increase our devotional life, then that's some benefit there. So that was an interesting experience. And after I was reading it, I was thinking. And he said he was so thankful after accepting it, because when you get hit with this at the beginning, it just kind of rocks you. It shakes you, right? When you have something that is really nice and it looks like it's Krishna conscious, and then Krishna says, or a spiritual master says, do something else, or go and try and change ashrams. That's scary, right? Can be. Prabhupada also talks about himself. How when his spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, appeared to him in a dream and told him the same thing, he goes to Sridhar Maharaj in the middle of the night, bangs on Sridhar Maharaj's door and says, Guru Maharaj is asking me to give up my family and take sannyas. Sridhar Maharaj just listened to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada had a second dream. And again, he came to Sridhar Maharaj because he needed somebody to speak to, you know, to explain. And of course, he had much faith and trust in Sridhar Maharaj. So ultimately, you know, he accepted because he understood it's the will of the Lord. But sometimes, you know, we find that even what's best for us is even difficult to do. Like sometimes, I don't know if I should say this. I'll say it anyway. Just like sometimes the spiritual master will say, you know, Brahmachari, you should get married. And he thinks, well, I don't want to. But then the spiritual master will ask him again. But see, that's one instruction you can disobey. There's only one instruction you can disobey. If the spiritual master tells you to get married, you can disobey that instruction. Only if you become Krishna conscious. If you stay the way you are, then it's a problem. Then the disobeying of that instruction means that you'll fall. But therefore, the spiritual master will sometimes give you that instruction in order to inspire you to either get it together or change ashrams, either one. So, therefore, that's the message. So the spiritual master, or Krishna, in different ways, will create a situation. And look what he did to Bali Maharaj. He put him in a situation where eventually he lost everything. Everything. And, as it goes on, he was like a criminal for not being able to fulfill his desire, his promise. He promised 3 steps of land, and he only gave 2, because Vamanadeva took everything, and Bali was stuck. And the Lord said, you're a thief. You're a liar. You promised 3. You're a brahmana. Brahman's promise is a sacred. Better to give up your life than give up your promise. That's the quality of a brahminical vow. And he didn't know what to do. Krishna really put him on the spot, yeah. So if he does that to us, we should think there must be something good about this. Sometimes, you know, just like devotees, sometimes they come down with some terminal disease. I mean, it's time to leave the world. And they say, well, why me? Right? What is Krishna doing to me? Why is he allowing this to happen? So there, that's the test of our bhakti. When we're faced with a situation where we have to surrender, there's no question. And Bali Maharaj passed the test. He passed the test. And he happily passed the test. But he needed the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, who appeared in the assembly later and gave the mercy to his grandson. And therefore he knew exactly what to do in the presence of Prahlad Maharaj. So this is a wonderful pastime. This is probably one of the most amazing pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's so deep in bhakti, tradition, culture, the Lord's mercy, and extraordinary, what we say, qualities. The qualities of Bali Maharaj become so exemplary. Now, look at Bali Maharaj. He's an asura, and he becomes a Mahajan. Not just an ordinary devotee, he's a Mahajan. That means he's one of the greatest of all Vaishnavas, is a Mahajan. One who can teach, a Mahajan is one who can teach the religious principles to others. He goes from an asura to someone who is glorious and becomes a leader in the field of Vaishnavas. Amazing. That was the Lord's mercy. The Lord wanted to glorify Bali and give him all the mercy he could possibly give him. And he gave him a lot of mercy. A lot of mercy. Because he surrendered. Okay, any questions? Yes.